all that time.
Always, Eric. Always.
Always, right. Always. That's a great Snape impression, right? That's also what the fans want.
That was great.
Yeah, they were clamoring for it.
Last time this guy comes on the podcast.
Welcome back to Puffcast, your Harry Potter happy place. This is episode 76 on April 26, 2023, and I am Melanie.
And I'm Juliana, and today we have a very special guest.
A very special guest.
Yeah, very special. The amazing wandmaker and an overall fabulous dude. We have Eric of Woodthrush Wand. So Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Yay. Hello, thanks. It is a huge honor to be here.
It's a long time coming. We definitely have wanted to have you on for a while.
Yeah.
And you're one of our friends, too, so...
Yeah.
Are we a little bit biased? Yes. Does that really matter? No, because you're fabulous anyway, so...
Well, thank you. It's awesome to be on.
So, before we head into the main discussion and the news, why don't you give our listeners just an overview of who you are?
Sure. So, I'm Eric. Eric Manweiler of Woodthrush Wands. My preferred pronouns are he, him, his. My house is undoubtedly Hufflepuff, of course.
Yeah.
My Patronus is unquestionably the dappled gray mare, according to about five or six attempts at the Pottermore quiz. Each one came up with the same result, so I think that's pretty definitive.
I always have the dolphin, too, so
I think I've only taken the Patronus quiz once.
Yeah, well, but there's like, I don't know, I found websites where you could take it again and then they had different versions and versions that had like every version.
Oh.
And after about the fifth result, at least, I was like, okay.
Do you like the dapple gray mare?
I mean, I don't really have a connection with it. I know that's not really a requirement.
Apparently not. Most people don't.
Yeah, I don't feel like it has the same effect. Like some of the Patronuses I think are kind of cheating.
Like the dragon?
Or like an orca coming out of your... Like, are you kidding? Yes, anything's going to be terrified by an orca. Yes, it's huge.
Yeah, and they have like teeth, like really, really pointy teeth.
Right. They're like apex predators. So
yeah.
Like, yeah, I think the Dementor is probably going to run. Because who wouldn't? And I will say, horses are terrifying because they're giant.
I agree.
Yeah.
But it wasn't exactly what I was expecting.
If you could pick one, what would you pick?
Probably the most recent daydream Patronus of mine is Chewbacca with two lightsabers. I feel like that's a pretty effective Patronus.
Yeah.
I've also thought about an Ent.
The what?
An Ent from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I would love that.
Oh, okay. That's why I don't know what this is, because
yeah.
I know nothing about Lord of the Rings.
I mean, it's a giant tree-like forest guardian. That seems pretty on brand.
But, okay, wand.
So my wand is Hazel, Phoenix Feather, 10¾ inch, and hard flexibility.
Ooh, okay. Is that a wand that you would pick for yourself?
You know, interesting. The Hazelwood, yes. I don't actually prefer shorter wands. And 10¾ is kind of short, but I do have a Hazel wand here. This is made by my buddy Merlin's Woodwork.
Oh, nice.
And it's like... been choked by a vine, so the tree got all twisty like this. Longer than my actual dimensions, but yeah, I kind of prefer that.
Ooh,
but Hazelwood's pretty cool. You know, there's nothing in it that I was like, I don't know that that's right. Phoenix Feather, I think, is a pretty cool core. I can get behind that.
And now, the most controversial question, Eric. What is your favorite food that is not pizza? You must let the listeners know they're clamoring to hear the answer.
Ice cream.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. It's not a responsible choice. I'm not claiming that. But it is the answer.
Pizza's not necessarily a responsible choice either, but is it the right choice? Yes.
I think it would get you a little further in life than on the survival scale. I think pizza probably ranks a little bit better than ice cream.
Okay. And Eric, why don't you let our listeners know just very briefly about who you are? Because we'll get more into that in the main discussion portion of the episode.
Yeah. So I'm Eric, as you all know. I'm a wand maker, and just nature has always captured my my imagination, and is really like where magic comes from for me. I've loved animals since I was a little kid. As I've sort of grown, I've gotten more of an appreciation for plants. But like as a kid, I was like very hyper focused on animals and creatures. You know, as an adult now, like I'm a birder, I love hiking, love learning about, you know, nature and all that. We're really into native plants. I say hi to every bee that I see anywhere ever. But that really has kind of come into my fandoms of all kinds, whether it's Star Wars or Harry Potter, my two main. Lord of the Rings is sort of a growing thing, but kind of that the natural side of it is always what really, I think, pulls me and where I think a lot of sort of the source of magic and mystery and imagination really comes from.
Yay. And we'll definitely get more into that in our main discussion, because if you hadn't guessed, listeners, Eric's going to be talking somewhat about nature in the main discussion.
A little bit. There may be a couple points here.
Maybe a few nature-related points in that discussion. Yes. And now we shall head into the news. Do-do-do-do-do-do news. Listeners, welcome to the news. We would like to start off the news with something that we were really excited to contribute to, and it is the total donations that the WAVAW was able to raise part of their Streaming for Survivors fundraiser. And just for everyone's reference, our goal was to raise $700, and we raised just about $700. So thank you to everyone who donated and helping us reach that goal for the third year in a row, which is freaking fantastic.
Woo.
Yay. But Mel, how much money did the WAVAW raise overall?
They have reached so far, and I think there is still something coming in, 95,700 and more.
Wow.
So they are very close to their initial goal, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it does so much good too, because if you go on their website, you can see like how much just like a $20 to $25 donation will do for helping people out. And I also found out, and I think we announced this on our last episode, that their 24/7 crisis line is actually worldwide. So it does not matter where you live, you can access their crisis line at any time during the day, and they can provide you with support like over the phone and also connect you with resources. So that is an extremely wonderful and needed thing out there. So thank you to everyone who donated. Yes. And thank you to our patrons as well, too, because our April donation went to the WAVAW. On the tip of that, our May donation will be going to our friend Eric, who is here. His inspiration is Jane Goodall. And so we donated to the Jane Goodall Foundation for the month of May. So thank you to all of our patrons for helping us make that possible, too. Yay. So that's awesome. And in other news, the Noble Collection has Patronus plushies that are out now. They have the stag, the otter, the hare, and the phoenix, and you can buy them on Amazon. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about these quite yet, Mel. What are your thoughts and feelings about these plushies?
Well, the very first impression, I think they look very soft and cute. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I really feel like they are Patronuses for some reason when I look at them. I think you and I already had a discussion like privately before that we feel like there are so many creators out there who could have done something much more cooler.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're cute. I think for a kid, it's probably fine. But
yeah, to me, they just look like plushies that were dyed like light blue. There's nothing like mystical or magical or like sparkly, airy about them or anything like a Patronus should be, you know?
Yeah.
Totally agree with you too, Mel, and the fact that like we know so many amazing creators, like even like Eric, who is standing in the background right now, creeping on our news. He makes such wonderful pieces of art, and our friend Jenna of Hidden Folk Studios, who made Mahogany Birch Oak the Third, my bow truckle, and your, what was your firebuck crab's name, Mel?
Alphonse.
I probably pronounced that wrong. But she makes such wonderful movie accurate prop animal doll creature things. I'm not exactly, I think they would call art dolls possibly. Yeah, I'm kind of not really sold. Plus they only have four.
Mm-hmm. Like the bright blue eyes. They look kind of creepy.
Yeah, they're kind of weird. That's that. But then we also had some studio tour news. And would you like to talk about that, Mel?
Sure. So, like, brand new for 2023, they have a new theme happening. Discovering Hogwarts will take place between the 2nd May and the 4th of September, where, just like a Hogwarts student would, the studio tour will celebrate its 11th year with an invitation to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. You will be invited to explore Harry's early years at Hogwarts with some of your favorite scenes brought to life. So, for example, they will have, for the very first time since filming, over 400 floating candles above the ceiling, or on the ceiling, of the Great Hall. So when you're coming in, they will be right above you, which I'm sure will look really cool.
Yeah.
Also, in Professor Flitwick's Charms class, there will be a live demonstration. You are invited to try your hand at Wingardium Leviosa and see how filming techniques were used to bring the spell to life.
Ooh, that's cool. I want to do that.
Yeah. There will also be a special feature on all things Hagrid, which I think could be really fun.
Yeah.
And lots of interactive experiences that include also being able to create an origami sorting ceremony chatterbox to take away. Mm. I'm not sure what is a chatterbox.
To me, you know those fortune tellers that you use your hands to pick a color, pick a number, pick a word.
Okay.
I think that's what people in England call, like, I would call it a paper fortune teller. I think they call that a chatterbox.
Okay. Yeah. So you can create those and take them home. There will be lots of photo opportunities that will depict Harry's first boat journey to Hogwarts and other things. Again, it starts on May 2nd and runs until 4th of September this year. So you should go and check it out.
Which is exciting because I'm going to be there with a couple other of the friend wand makers here, Roy of Snivellus Wands and Joe of Mooney's Wands.
Yeah.
We're going to be there in June.
Oh, that's so cool.
And this is your first time going there, right, Eric?
Mm-hmm. First time going and first time meeting those guys in person. So
you're in for a treat.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, so here we have a live response right away from you.
Yeah.
As soon as you have been there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, we are now handing the news over to our co-anchor for today, Eric Manweiler. Eric, take it away.
Thank you, Juliana. So the Harry Potter TV series becomes a reality, or is it? According to news website Bloomberg, which was first to report the news from sources close to the situation, suggests that Warner Brothers Discovery Inc. is close to a deal for a new online TV series based on Harry Potter. Each season of the series will be based on one of the seven books. The company is hoping that the series can be on can be one of the cornerstones of a new streaming strategy that will be announced next week. Mm-hmm. So by the time that this episode is out, we should know more. The chief executive officer, David Zaslav, and HBO chief, Casey Bloys, have worked to convince Rowling to produce a new series, but the deal hasn't been completed. A spokesperson for Warner Brothers declined to comment. The author will be involved in the series to ensure that it remains loyal to the original material, but will not run the show day to day or serve as its primary creator.
Okay, so Eric, as you are the one who very dramatically read that news, so congratulations on that.
No, you did very well.
That was very good. What are your initial thoughts? Well, as the guest, we'll let you go first, and because I know Mel and I both have thoughts on this too, as does probably everyone listening to this podcast right now. So listeners, if you do have thoughts, send it puffcastpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear them. But Eric, since you are here, what are your thoughts?
It's a totally lame premise.
Yeah, we kind of agreed on that too.
With all of the possible content that you could create in this, I mean, like, the magical world is endless. You could go so many different ways. Why retell the same story? Like, even if there are parts that you, from the book that you left out, or maybe even things that both left out that you could sort of fill in gaps or something, we already know those stories. Like, we've already seen them in the movies, read them in the books. You know, we've got it. Yeah, you could tell it from a different perspective, but, like, I would really rather to have some new story. Two things that I really wish that they would do instead. Mm-hmm. One is, I think, easy. just do a Crocodile Hunters type show with Newt Scamander. And I mean, that's all you need to do. Just take that show and just replace Steve Irwin with Newt.
Ah.
Put in Jacob and perfect.
Be good. I like that. I would watch it.
Second idea would be like tell the stories of the other wizarding schools.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
There's so much material there. You could have an entire series per school. Not even just like a season, mm-hmm. but just like, you know, here's the Ilvermorny show. Here's the Durmstrang show. Like, mm-hmm. I'd watch it.
Yeah. And you'd be able to create original characters too. And yeah. I feel like that would really sell well with fans.
Yeah.
Especially like if you're from those areas, like us getting to see mm-hmm. an American school, or maybe people who are in France getting to see the French school, or going to see the African school, which I would love to see, yeah. which would be really, really cool.
Yeah. They do wandless magic. Like, yeah, I want to know more about Wagadoo, like the African school. That would be amazing.
Natty from Hogwarts Legacy totally sold me, like, even more on Wagadoo.
Yeah.
I'm like, I love her. She's great.
I mean, so, like, those schools were introduced prior to the Fantastic Beasts movies, and then mm-hmm. we heard nothing more about them ever.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind
so,
of it.
So, like,
that's true.
I feel like that's kind of an easy one.
Yeah.
It would pull people more in, I think, because mm-hmm. those would give us the chance to watch characters develop that we have no idea yet about, and we could mm-hmm. really get into it and attach ourselves to those and be excited to see where their story goes. So that I like that very much, too. Most of the people, as it always has been, screaming for the Marauders story, which I always think that... Once people would get that story, they wouldn't like them anymore because they're mm-hmm. big bullies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You wouldn't like them anymore. So that's just, maybe it's just my opinion.
No, I'm in the same boat as you, Mel.
Yeah.
Yes. Snape is not a nice character. And I mean, in reality, I don't think James and Sirius and like Lupin kind of on the baseline, but he's like following along with them. So I don't think they're nice people.
I think they're humans, right? Like they can mean well in some circumstances. I think that James was probably not a great influence on the group. Mm-mm. But yeah, like they did terrible things. I don't know that they were terrible people, but like they did terrible things. But I think more than anything, it's like I feel like you have more of a chance to screw that up than you do yeah. to succeed.
Yeah, that's true. Because there is a lot of Marauders content out there.
Yeah, well, and like it connects so much to the original stories. Like, if you yeah. deviate from things, like the canon repercussions from
like with McGonagall,
mm-hmm. Exhibit A,
yeah,
right? The fact that like Newt and Tina disarmed Grindelwald in the end of the first Fantastic Beasts movies, and yet he's already the owner of the Elder Wand. Well, how yeah. does that work? There's so much that you might have to like make up for, and even characters, like, if you tell the original stories. There is a tall, very, very high hill to climb before mm-hmm. I'm going to accept anybody else as Hagrid or Snape. I think Jenna
yeah.
oh, mentioned
yeah.
that, and I totally
yeah,
agree.
Did,
when
yeah.
she said, I was like, oh, that's a great point.
Yeah, yeah. I think I have like two main like things based off of what you said, Er. The first one being that like I fully agree with like how are they going to replace these actors who like are like literally not just iconic for Harry Potter fans, but like just iconic in the zeitgeist of the entire human being existence at this point. Like, who's going to replace Alan Rickman? Like, literally, who is going to do it? It's going to be Adam Driver, but like, yeah. like obviously Adam Driver, but but it's a really high thing to. Come over. And the fact that too, I think that this should be an animated series. I like the Star Wars Clone Wars style animation is my favorite, because that way they can have voice actors and they don't have to worry about these kids growing up and like possibly having to replace them, especially mm-hmm. if they're doing like 1 year at a time. Like, these kids are going to grow up and it's going to be like less authentic to the storyline. And I feel like they just got lucky with the movies. Like, the timing just kind of mm-hmm. worked out with everything. And I think my second point is that I feel like Hogwarts Legacy is the perfect example of how they created a brand new storyline that is engaging and compelling and interesting without mm-hmm. using any of the characters from the original Potter plot line, really. Like, there are a few, like, nods to people, and we do get some information about, like, the Marvolos?
Marvolo?
Marvolos, yeah. Tom Riddle's ancestors.
What Juliana means here is, of course, the Gaunt family, with Marvolo Gaunt being the grandfather of Voldemort.
but there's no reference to Voldemort. There's no reference to anything. Like, we see, like, people have similar last names, like Professor Weasley. We know she's related to Ron and all the Weasleys in the future, but there's no, like, actual connection, really. And there's no plot points that are actually consequential. I haven't played it yet, but I watched through the whole storyline for Hogwarts Legacy, and I really liked the story, and I thought it was good. So I think they can do that again if they pick a different timeline to be on that's still related and still very much so at Hogwarts. And like that timeline and that story felt like a Hogwarts story, and it really, like, you were part of it. You were a wizard in that school, but it didn't feel like Harry Potter ripoff material, you know?
Yeah.
I also think that this is actually feeling like the perfect time to create something completely new, because we have had these stories for so long and there is not much new that you can do with it, and it just feels so much more exciting for everyone. It would get us, as I already said before, it would engage us so much more to get a whole new story, new characters, new plays, and go with that. You are so free to write. But just to, like, conclude this also, because we shouldn't, like, go on for an hour about this.
Try to move on.
I also still personally feel like, finally, they might be doing a TV show. We have been talking about this for years now. There's always rumors going on. I only believe that this TV show happens when it's actually there. So right now, I am still feeling like, okay, how much can we really trust this in the end? So is it really going to happen or not? Or is this just, like, you know, once again the same thing? I guess we will see if there is really an announcement coming in a couple of weeks. So as we said earlier, by the time that this episode is coming out, we will know, so we can add a blurb here.
Hello, little update. The television show has been officially announced. So this is actually happening, and we will see what happens. So we actually asked you on Instagram how you feel about the new upcoming television show. And so many of you said that, yes, bring it on, or were saying, I would like to have a completely new story, completely new characters that we can get behind. So a lot of you were actually voting yes for it. More than people said, no, thank you. But those of you who are against it have had some very compelling arguments for it. But I think in future episodes, we are still going to talk way more detail about it. We got so many comments and messages from you guys that I'm sure in the next episode, we will include quite a few of them. And I just wanted to let you know that with our asking you guys and voting for it, most of you were, almost over 70% of you guys were saying, yes, let's go for it. And the rest of you said, no, thank you.
Okay. And speaking of announcements, we have our Hogwarts House Pride contest on the Wizarding World website. We have the winner. And to no one's surprise, it is the Ravenclaws.
Ravenclaw!
Surprise, surprise, the Ravenclaws were on the quiz.
I have to admit, I have actually missed doing the last 2 weeks.
I missed the last week. I got the other three, though, so I'm okay with that. Yeah, but
it's fine.
Yeah.
I kind of didn't do it.
Oh, Eric.
I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, no.
It's fine. We Hufflepuffs always like to do other things anyway. So
I was outside, so
we're easily distracted.
Yeah, so whatever. But congratulations, Ravenclaw. You did very well.
Okay. And our last bit of news is something that literally just got announced the other day, kind of in a roundabout way. But the New York VR experiences are permanently closing. This was kind of a sudden announcement that they made, and I know there were some people on my socials who were employees of this who were like, I did not know this was coming. The people from the Harry Potter New York store said, our VR experience are now closed and we'll be reopening these spaces to showcase even more of your favorite Wizarding World products soon. Keep an eye on our social media channels for updates. So there's really nothing, no information beyond like that they closed it and they're going to be replacing it with something, but we have no idea what. And some people are out of a job, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Hello, friends. Melanie likes to do little blurbs in this episode. Since we have recorded this episode, we had a couple more news coming out, and I wanted to at least give them a quick mention. One of them is that Warner Brothers has suspended the sales of the Harry Potter Magic Caster Wand smart device.
and the decision is possibly related to a dispute with Kano, the creators of the Harry Potter coding kit. There is a couple more details on that. If you're interested to look it up, please do so. But it seems like this has been discontinued and you can't get them anymore. So if you were interested in it, then unfortunately the time is past. The people were a little bit critical about it anyway, about the product itself, the way it looked, its quality, etc. Some were very excited, but I guess this product has now stopped being made and is not gonna give us any other opportunities to be used in other ways that we had thought or hoped for. There is also an official announcement that there is going to be a new Quidditch game coming out called Harry Potter Quidditch Champions from the Portkey Games very soon. The game will be available for PC as well as consoles that have yet to be confirmed. There is no official release date yet, but it's currently ready for playtesting. I actually also got an email for that with an invitation to sign up, so let's see if I get in, and if you do, let us know how you like it. Our other game news is that Harry Potter Magic Awakened has finally begun with a soft launch in selected countries. So this seems to be a second round of test gaming for it. I was actually already back then part of the first round and really loved the graphics. If you remember, we shared some of them on our socials at the time. It is now available to play in Austria, Denmark, Finland, yes, you heard that right, Israel, Luxembourg, Norway, Poland, South Africa, Sweden, and Switzerland. Though it is promised that new countries will be added over time. The Magic Awakened team also specifically said that the soft launch version does not represent the final game product. They are still taking in feedback to make it perfect before the official global release. So, there's so many games coming out right now. I don't think anyone will be going outside anymore this summer and will just be playing Quidditch, Harry Potter Awakened, Hogwarts Legacy, so many games. And another quick note is that yet another production of The Cursed Child has announced its closing date. Cursed Child in Toronto will end its run in July. So if you are planning to still see it over there, you have a chance until July and then it is done. All over the world, they keep closing. What's up with that? But I think that was all the extra news that we had, and I'm letting you go back to the episode.
Okay, so that rounds out the news, and we did have a little bit of feedback about our last episode where we talked about magical tattoos, and we posed the question, who do you think has tattoos, and what do they look like? And we were just talking about our friend Jenna, and our friend Jenna of the Hidden Focus Studio said, Albus would have a small Deathly Hallows on his chest. Grindelwald has a matching one. These were done in the best days of their partnership after a night of too much fire whiskey.
I could see that. We have had lots of suggestions here.
Yeah. Okay. And then our friend Parth said Neville would have a Mimbletonia on his arm. I think Neville definitely, like, as he got older, would acquire a lot of tattoos. He seems like a tattoo boy to me.
Does he?
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't see it. I don't know why.
I think he'd get one and then he would just like be like, yeah, I like tattoos. And he would just end up getting like a whole arm, an arm sleeve of plants. Hmm. All his favorite plants.
The nerdy THX said Hagrid would absolutely have a Norbert tattoo on his chest. Mm-hmm. With maybe one for Fluffy and Buckbeak somewhere else too. Yeah. I could see this.
I think Hagrid has a full back tattoo of Aragog.
I was just thinking Aragog is missing still. I think yeah. He would like to have like a remembrance. And
I think of all of the people that are sort of proposed as like someone that sort of snowballs and gets a whole bunch of tattoos, I feel like Hagrid would, because he would get one for Aragog, and he's like, oh, I gotta get one for Buckbeak. Well, I have to have one for Norbert. All right, well, now I gotta have one for Fluffy. Fang, of course. Like,
yeah. And all the other ones that we don't even know about.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure he has a blast-ended Scroot tattoo somewhere, hopefully on his butt.
Oh, yeah.
I really hope it's on his butt. That would be great.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we had the mortal reader who said, Mr. Weasley has a rubber duck, and that would be pretty funny, actually.
I love that.
Yes.
Hogwarts, a pod, suggested that Charlie Weasley would have a dragon breathing fire over one of the burns of his forearm, which I think sounds so cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty like badass way to turn a burn or an injury into something really cool.
Yes.
This is probably my favorite of all the suggestions.
What did David have to say?
David of Crooked Wands, shout out, said Percy would have a tattoo of a cauldron with extra thick bottom, a head boy tattooed across his chest, and a memorial tattoo of Mr. Crouch on his arm. Mm. Hilarious.
Aww. I love that.
All right. So those were great suggestions. Thanks, everyone. And the last thing we still want to do is give you all a big thank you for the birthday wishes last month, which made us 3-year-old toddlers now. So, Juliana, we are freshly out of our diapers. Okay. We are toddlers.
I've just recently been potty trained. I can now kind of crawl slash walk across the room. I'm feeling good. Taking on life one diaperless day at a time.
You have so many more mischievous possibilities now.
Yeah, I know. Now I can really move around. So mobility, watch out,
listeners. It's coming.
It's going to be even more all over the place now. So thank you guys for all the birthday wishes. That was very nice that you thought of us. Yeah, I think that is it. And Juliana, do you want to play us out of the feedback and news?
Do-do-do-do-do-do. News. Thank you for joining us for the news, listeners. And now, on to the main discussion. Okay, here we are, friends, in the main discussion. This week, of course, we have our friend Eric, who has been with us since the beginning of this episode, and he is going to be talking about one of his favorite things, nature, and how it relates to the Harry Potter universe. So I think we should start like we do with most of our friends, Eric, is how did you find Harry Potter, and what was kind of your Harry Potter origin story? Give us a little brief synopsis into that.
Yeah, so I actually, like, when it first came out as books, I was not interested at all. It was not a good sell. I only really sort of got close to me years later. Like, a girl that I was dating was like, oh, you should read Harry Potter. I love it. It's about a wizard boy and it's got house elves. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, that's weird. But when I started dating my now wife, she was really into Harry Potter. She had been reading the books as they came out and were of that age where, like, we were, you know, about the same age as Harry when they came out. And so I had been seeing the movies with her. And as a condition for getting married, I had to read one book before we could get married.
Oh, okay.
So I read the book and I loved it. It was amazing. So then now, fast forward, and I think I'm a bigger Potterhead than she is, maybe.
You know, that's funny. I feel like a lot of people who didn't grow up with the books, I feel like they end up out-pottering the person who gave them their original source material.
Yeah, we just have to make up for lost time or something, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Now, as we know, Eric, you are a accomplished, we shall say, wand maker. Like, kind of what drew you from just being a casual Harry Potter fan to being active in the wand creating space?
Yeah. So my first fandom love was Star Wars. And I got into making things with lightsabers.
Oh, yeah. You did show me one of your lightsabers one time. And I was like, yeah. Wow, what the heck? Like, you're like a freaking engineer. Very detailed and unbelievable that he made that.
Yeah. And, you know, I got into making things that way, but... So actually, the very first wand that I ever made was, this is a white pine from one of the oldest forests in Indiana. And it was just like sitting on the path, and you can see it's got this like little perfect handle bend. So that like kind of struck my imagination. So like I just sort of shaped the tip of it. It's just got sort of a curvy, wavy tip. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then my parents have a sycamore tree in their front yard, and a big limb got torn off by a trash truck.
Oh, no.
And I knew people who, you know, making wands, Deacon at Windermere, and some of the other people that I had sort of followed to that point. And I was like, oh, I hate to waste this wood. So, like, I took some pieces, and then I gave some pieces away and stuff. But I found that, like, that making urge really kind of took me. The making, even the lightsaber thing, kind of started around the pandemic time. I had been more of a musician before that. And so I just took a stab at a wand.
Yeah.
And then that led to making another and another. And I think it just sort of grew out of that. I found that wands are, one, a lot cheaper to make and take a lot less time. So you can, it's sort of that like immediate kind
dopamine rush.
Reward. Yeah, exactly. Where like I can sit down and sort of immediately get responses and things where like with a lightsaber, you have to like really plan stuff out. And like, because you're working with metals.
Yeah. It's a lot less by feel.
Yeah. And if you really want to do a lot of work, you have to have like incredible machines that I don't. Mm-hmm. But with wood, I mean, you can do a lot with just files. And I mean, if you have a blade, you can go at it and make something happen.
Yeah.
So I think that's really where it came from. But all of it really, again, I guess kind of tying back into the theme coming up is wood has so much life and magic feeling to it that personally feeling, I will never get from a resin wand.
Agreed. Yeah.
It just doesn't feel the same.
Yeah. I feel like every time I pick up a wand, especially one that is like specifically handmade for me or with a specific intention in mind, I can just feel the soul of the person who made it radiating out of it. It just makes me smile from the inside out.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons why I love wand collecting, because to your point, like not only is each one of these made by a friend of mine, but most of them were specifically made for me. And like, like this one that I just got from Camila.
Ooh, that's pretty.
Right. But she asked me when I commissioned the wand, and she was like, okay, well, do you know what you want? And I, of course, said, nope, I have no idea. And she said, well, why don't you write me a story about adventures that you would take this wand on and things like that? So, like, first of all, brilliant premise for a commission.
Very smart. Props to you, Camila.
Yeah, right. Like, I love that. But that wand now is imprinted with that story for me.
Yeah, I love it.
That makes it even more unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've kind of come about is like people who have commissioned like Hufflepuff themed wands for me.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's interpretation of it is so different and their style is very reflected in it, which kind of brings us back to you too, Eric, because your style when you are creating wands is very like nature based, very like working with the original shape that you're given of the wood and other shapes you would naturally find either in that specific type of wood or in nature in general.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to speak a little bit more to like the stylization and your wand type that you make, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a style that I really want to eventually get into, which like right now you've got sort of wands that are like very ornate, carved. It looks very beautiful, but man-made, right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got wands that are very natural and it looks more like a stick. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a refined stick.
Right. It looks like a stick that has a lot of, like, enough character that when you look at it, you go, that's not just a stick.
Yeah.
And I really want to explore and develop a style that blends those two, that when you look at it, you know immediately, like, it's got all of the sort of ornate and beautiful shapes and carvings to it, but applied with bark texture on top of it so that it looks like the tree grew that way. Yeah, a lot of my wands are, you know, natural looking. I mean, all I did was just sort of follow the wood. I would try something and the wood would kind of show something and just sort of roll with it. I want you to be able to feel the forest and feel the tree that came from.
Feel it on my toes.
Yeah, like, so is that a reference that I missed?
No, I'm just saying that. I'm just like, I'm feeling the forest in my toes, just like standing on the forest floor as I hold your wand, being like, ooh, forest.
Well, that's what I really want, because I bring this up in some of the points that I've got, but and I think I've already said it. But for me, like, nature is where magic comes from.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, even in canon, like the reason why a wood is magical is because of nature. Right. The like all of the interactions and the balances that happen to make an ecosystem work is what makes magic.
Yeah.
And I want you to sort of feel that when you're holding one of my wands.
So why don't you kind of tell us about like why nature is so magical to you and like the magical aspects of nature, which I know you have many points to be making here.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of maybe educate people as to why you think that nature and know that nature is such a magical, amazing place. Because I feel like anyone who's ever gone on a hike is just kind of wowed by what's happening around them.
Right. For me, it's a forest. Forests are where my heart is happiest, but whether it's a desert or plains or...
the tundra.
Yeah, the tundra, like every ecosystem has its own balance and it all works the same way, right? Like down to a microscopic level, like all of the things there are working in tandem. And for it to be healthy, there's a balance, right? These things do this, which feeds that, which feeds this. And everything is a sort of self-sustaining cycle system. And all of that interaction, I think, is what has inspired art, religion, stories, sculpture. I mean, humans have looked to nature and found magic and mystery for thousands of years. I mean, as long as we have recorded history, as long as we've been telling stories, even cave paintings and things, like humans have looked to nature and found that magic. And, you know, I don't think that that's a mistake. So, you know, again, to me, like whether it's trees exchanging nutrients and things through underground, you know, fungal systems and things that like we had no idea were happening, and they can actually like communicate and barter and have economies and things, like, that's magic, right?
I agree.
All of those interactions that we see and don't see, and whether we know about them or don't know about them, like it is so much of what sparks my imagination. And I think, again, that imagination is what sort of magic comes from.
Yeah. Nature has really sparked people's imagination for thousands of years. Because you think back to even like the stories of, because I know I'm reading about the Norse and also Greek gods through Percy Jackson and also now the Magnus Chase series. They used these gods and these like magic scenarios to explain what was happening in nature.
Right.
They tried to explain it before they could actually see what was happening, because to them, all these little things that were happening, the fact that the plants were growing, the fact that the seasons came and went, this was magic to them.
Mm-hmm.
We know today it's not like actual literal magic, but it is magic in the sense that it's magical in the way that it all works as one harmonious system.
A counterpoint to that would be, you know, like Dumbledore said, of course it's happening in your head, Harry, but why should that mean that it isn't real, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Love can be explained away as like, it's just chemicals in your brain and you just process it that way. But that doesn't change the reality of that feeling for us. And I think that magic can be, whether it's truly, yes, I'm moving a physical thing in my mind. You know, I think a lot of it is feeling. One of my buddies, Noel, who made these two wands, he said something similar. We're like, magic is something along the lines of like, magic is what you see. And if you choose to see it, you'll see it. And if you don't, then you probably won't, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's sort of a perspective and all that. But going back to nature, like that is where I feel the most magic.
Mm-hmm. That's what like excites your soul the most. It brings you the most like innate internal joy.
Mm-hmm. It's so important to me personally. And yeah, really why I'm making wands. I mean, I became a tree nerd because of it and all that. So
no looking back now. You're already a tree nerd. Right? You can't undo being a tree nerd.
you cannot un-nerd yourself.
I think one of the things that you wanted to talk to too, Eric, was why it's important to conserve nature, why it's important to preserve this nature that we have and this magic that the world holds, because as many of us know, global warming, friends, is real. Mm. And also, as we grow larger as a society, we're taking up more and more space, and that means less and less space for the nature that is existing out there, and more emissions and things that we are putting out as a human being. Yeah, Eric, so what does that mean to you? Like nature conservation? And then maybe if you can give our listeners some ideas as to some good ways to help nature be preserved a little bit.
Yeah, so in our more muggle-oriented world, it is so important for us to be conserving land. And that means that like we have to be able to use the developed land that we already have better in order for us to survive and for climate change and the climate crisis to be controlled. Like we have to preserve more land than we are.
Mm-hmm.
As sort of humans have developed and our cultures have sort of established, we've taken more than we can. That sort of balance of nature is disrupted. And the more that we sort of go down that path, the worse it gets. Some things that people can do, you know, a lot of us don't live in forests. We don't live in wild areas. But a big thing that anyone that actually has a yard or even a patio or something that is an outside space can do is planting native plants that are native to your area. Because the insects and the birds, everything related evolves with those plants in that area. So, you know, as invasive species take over and they outcompete native species, then all of a sudden the biome around you is starting to collapse because it's all built from the bottom up. So,
and do we want to define what biome is, Eric, for our friends to like? Because I know what a biome is, but I have a background in.
Right.
And like science, so that's kind of a big word.
I probably don't know the specific scientific definition, but essentially the small sort of local habitat. So the ecosystem of your immediate area. Mm-hmm. For instance, here originally this would have been forest land, and a lot of Indiana where I live is either would have been forest or would have been like a wetland. There's some areas that would have naturally been prairie, but a lot of it was converted into farmland. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a question of like, all right, well, what does planting native mean? But most places have like a native plant group, whether it's on Facebook or whatnot, but you can do a lot of Google searches and internet searches that will tell you what kind of plants, but a lot of it is trying to support pollinators. Mm-hmm. And pollinators are like really important for humans because without pollinators, we don't have food.
Yes. Bless you. Mel has some pollen up her nose right now. She says.
There you go.
Sorry.
Hopefully it's not an actual pollinator. Hopefully there's no little bees up there.
Right. Yeah. So planting plants that are native to your area, those can be tricky, but you can do it. That's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. If everybody did just that one thing, the wildlife would be able to really come back.
Recover a little bit.
Because, I mean, like all of the suburbs and I mean, we live in an area that has a homeowners association that they want everything to be a perfect green natural lawn. Lawns don't do anything for anyone. They're not native here. Nothing eats it.
Yeah.
And you've got to use all these chemicals and stuff that gets into the soil and get into the water and all that. Native plants don't need that to survive. They don't need you to go out and turn the sprinkler on all the time. They don't need fertilizers and stuff because they were meant to live in your area. Mm-hmm. And all of the birds and insects and all that, like I said, that need those that are in your area will also come back. It really helps me to kind of be grounded and appreciate mm-hmm. that, like, I am part of nature, even if I'm not in a forest right now. I feel like that really helps. And it gives me a lot of appreciation that, like, first of all, it's not hopeless. Like, nature continues. We haven't lost yet, right? I think that's a big thing. That goes a long way. All of us being careful with our consumption. Mm-hmm. And probably the biggest thing is trying to pressure companies and politicians to support that. I mean, mm-hmm. unfortunately, big systemic change is what we really need, and that comes from that.
Yeah.
But small things do add up.
Yeah. As we get like more into like our digital age, I would call it, people are like more engrossed with things that are happening inside. You kind of mm-hmm. lose that connection that you have to like just seeing things around you happen.
Yeah.
Like when I go running here at the beach, like, and I see that vast ocean landscape, there's nothing there. There's just all these animals that are just like constantly running. There's this little turtle that lives near me. He's like a foot by a foot and he shits in the mud. He's like, wah, wah, wah. He's so cute. I love him.
That's great.
You see things like that and you realize like, oh, it's not just me out here in this planet. There's mm-hmm. so many other things that are happening, just like little things like that that really ground you and make you realize like you're just one small little grain of sand in what is the planet. And for some people that's scary, but for me, I find it like kind of relaxing in a way.
Yeah,
just like kind of at ease. I'm like, ah, okay, if they can make, if these geese can make it happen, I think I can make it to the end of my day today.
Well, and, you know, there have been a lot of scientific studies that have shown, like, humans, when we connect to nature, whether it's, like, just stepping outside and listening to birds, birdsong is apparently, like, a huge magical key to stress reduction. It definitely can put your personal problems in perspective, too. Tomorrow will be a new day. These birds are going to be here. We're all going to be doing our thing. We can try again. We'll figure it out. again, it sort of reminds me that, like, life is complex, life is going on here. And yeah, like, I'm not alone. Like, there's all of this life happening, even just in my suburban neighborhood, right? Yeah. Like, there's still so much nature that's going around that, like, is awesome.
Yeah. On a baseline, there is so much just, like, joy and beauty in the natural world. A lot of us get stuck in, like, a negative mindset, and you go outside and you're like, that you can see, they're like, oh my gosh, that plant, it wasn't blooming yesterday, today it's blooming, it's got these, like, beautiful pink flowers on it, and, like, that's magic right there.
Absolutely.
Saying the magical word magic, how can we, like, relate this to the wizarding world?
Yeah, so actually, if we want to just, like, jump in, so I've got some main thoughts. So we already covered, like, for thousands of years, you know, we found magic in nature. But if you look at magical community needs, there are really kind of three areas that a magical community has needs in order to survive and thrive, right? Mm-hmm. One is imagination. Two is tools, potions, objects. And three is secrecy. And all of those things are enormously tied to the natural world. So if we take the first one, imagination, Dumbledore said words are our most inexhaustible source of magic. But words don't do anything without imagination to turn them into new spells and potions and wands and cloaks and things like that. So again, we kind of talked about this a little bit. So for me personally, like, all of the intricacies and the relationships and balance that comes in the natural world is magical. That's a source of magic. And if you think about it, like, the magical plants and creatures are born with innate magical abilities. And that being the case, like, it has to be part of their natural world. And so when you think about, like, the sort of furthering of magic, like, there's so much that we still don't know about nature and we have to learn. And with all of those tiny little actions and behaviors that we don't see, and the relationships between plants and animals and soil and all of that with each other, like, there is so much room for magical discovery and inspiration. So whether it's, like, a direct, oh, here's a new species and, oh, we can get this kind of magical material, or whether it's like, oh, we can see this creature that has this magical ability, so we're going to come up with a spell that mimics that. There is so much more to be learned from nature than what we've even kind of scratched the surface of. You know, the more we can conserve nature and keep nature thriving, the more it's around to help us learn and thrive ourselves.
Yeah. So if we give back to it, it's going to give back to us.
Like, exactly.
20 million times over.
100%. And then in the tools and potions and objects, first and foremost, unless you were trained at Wagadoo and or can do wandless magic.
That's not me.
Wands are a huge, you know, necessity in order to do magic.
Mm-hmm. They're conduit.
Right. Wood comes from trees, cores come from animals and plants and all that. All of these are living things. And the material that comes from them, we know it's affected by the species, right? So different tree species have different characteristics. I think it's likely that the same is true for dragons. So, like, a Herbidian black would have a different characteristic of a heartstring than, like, a Welsh green. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there are different species of phoenixes and thestrals, but I would assume that the same would apply there. A theory of mine is that this goes even further, that, like, it's the individuals themselves that also really affect and imprint the material that they produce. You know, we don't see that for sure, but, like, Ollivander tells Harry that, like, you know, no two wands are the same, even if they have the same wood and core types. And I just find it really reasonable that, like, the personality and abilities and powers of the individual that those came from would also, like, make its way into the cores and the wandwoods and all that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like that's something we see with the way that you and the other fellow wandmakers, like, make your wands, too, is that your personality, like, you try and channel a certain vibe or, like, a personality through the wand. But, like, I could tell seven different people, like, hey, make a Juliana wand. And I would get seven completely different wands because they're made by seven completely different artists and people with intentions. And, yeah, I definitely agree with that. The wand is definitely very reflective of the person who made it in a way that is also giving that, whatever that perspective is, to the person who is receiving the wand.
Yeah. But that's actually a really interesting point that I hadn't even brought into. I was actually thinking of the individual tree and core source.
Oh, okay. So you were thinking like straight up from the ground, roots and all.
Mm-hmm. And this is going to go even further here in a minute. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, the individual dragon that you get a heartstring from, or the individual kelpie or thestral, whatever it is, mm-hmm. the circumstances of that individual's life and their personality and abilities and all of that make its way into that core. Now, the point that you just brought up that I think is interesting is then that also gets influenced by the personality and the circumstances in which it's created. Again, going back to like, we've got two different dragon species that we're getting heartstrings from. Well, if this one is more aggressive, or it's a mountain, you know, a mountain dragon versus a cave dragon or something, you know, like those things change the qualities that the magical material produce.
That kind of speaks to what you're talking about the most in my head is if anyone who's seen or read Shadow and Bone, when you kill an animal, which is not preferred, we do not like to kill the animals, but when you do, you take the amplifier on from one of their bones. But part of how you approached that animal in that, I guess, exchange of death and life plays into how the amplifier reacts with you. And you can kind of like see bits and pieces of this animal's past life through this piece of them that you're then taking on. Usually it's embedded into their skin somehow, but it's very reflective of like who that creature was, like what their personality was, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Going into that, that is very much like the next kind of point. So if we take that to be true, then the circumstances of that individual's life and like you said, how the material was obtained by the wand maker affects the quality of that magic. So, you know, I think the quality of the life of the tree, animal, whatever it is, if they have a natural habitat, they're healthy, they're thriving, they're happy, I think that the less you have of any of those, the more negative effects, you know, you may have in the magical material. If you had a factory farm of phoenixes and they're just living in little cages and you're plucking feathers out, it's not going to produce strong wands, right? Mm-hmm. If you got the heartstring of the Norwegian ridgeback in the bottom of Gringotts, if he never got out.
Yeah.
If you make a wand with that, it's probably going to be weak. It's probably going to be, you know, more aggressive and defensive. It's going to be mistrusting, right? Mm-hmm. So giving creatures their healthy natural habitats and not having them constantly be in stress by people encroaching with it and all that, if they're allowed to thrive, again, going back with if you let nature thrive, if you take care of nature, nature takes care of you. I think, you know, even further, and this is kind of an interesting thing where like, you know, Ollivander says, oh, well, we can only use these three wand cores. I think any wand core, any wand wood, like if the core and the wood are from the same place, and especially if those like the tree and the creature had some kind of a relationship, like that even more amplifies the power of that material. We don't have any like proof of that, but the Elder Wand is maybe an example.
What's the core of the Elder Wand?
The core is a thestral hair.
Oh, okay.
Depending on your version of how that wand was created, either Death made it and he like took a branch from the elder tree that was right by the river. That means he either had a core, like a thestral hair, just randomly on him, or he found one in that same area.
Probably has a coat made of thestral hair.
Maybe. It is an interesting question of like, is that what his cloak was made of? We never find out what the cloak is made of, but maybe it's only like perfectly invisible if you've never seen Death. But I guess other people, never mind. Anyway, that's not true because other people can see Harry with the cloak on. But
Death must be able to see himself. I think I was just thinking in my head, I was like, can Death see himself? Because he's like technically maybe. Death. But I guess if he's looked in the mirror, then he's seen Death and he can see himself. But like, does he have to watch someone else die before he can see himself?
I've seen Death. He's right there. Sorry.
Yeah, he's like, hey, look, it's me.
So, you know, that's the most powerful wand in history.
Yeah.
So if Death didn't like magically make it, both thestrals and elder trees are native to the same area. Mm-hmm. It's very possible that they came from the exact same like locality, I guess, so to speak. Yeah, like right.
Ecosystem kind of.
Right. getting back to it, I think how the material was obtained, to your point, also I think really affects the characters and quality of the magic. So like if you have a relationship with the tree and the creature, and especially if those things willingly kind of offer that material, or, you know, I guess if something dies of natural causes and you can use it at that point, like I think there's a much more powerful magic there. And if those two things had relationships with each other, you know, you can think about the magic bond that those materials have in order to become a wand would be a lot stronger. I think kind of a similar thing happens with, you know, if you have a relationship with those things, if you sort of have been kind of taking care of them in a way and providing, again, those same things of like natural habitat and making, I mean, there's not a whole lot that we can make sure that like a wild animal or a wild thing is provided for without sort of kind of getting in the way.
Yeah.
But I think all that to say, like, if you just chop down a tree to get wandwood, or if, you know, you went out and, like, brutally murdered a dragon or a unicorn to get material for a wand, like, that trauma is going to change the magic that it produces. Mm-hmm. From a conservation perspective, like, we really need to think about, like, being responsible and using empathy when we're getting magical materials, whether it's for a wand or for potions ingredients or cloak material, whatever it is. Almost every magical object or potion or whatever has some tie back to the natural world. Mm-hmm. And we really need to be careful about that. So, you know, again, sort of providing for nature allows those tools and objects to sort of be the best that they can be. And there is so much more to be learned about wand lore that being tied to living beings, our support in sort of learning from nature will, of course, sort of drive that development and make wand lore and wand making that much better. And then, so the last thing would be like secrecy.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, magical communities have to remain secret from the Muggle communities. And unfortunately, I think this is probably the biggest failing of the magical world overall, in that, like, there is no better way to hide a magical community than if you put it in the middle of a wilderness. Yeah, you can hide a neighborhood or a building, but at some point, as more and more people take more and more space, someone's going to see that.
Yeah.
So if they had done more to sort of protect more areas of land and keep them wild, they would have had more options to live openly and without Muggle sort of observation. So I think that's a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some examples of where that has, like, been really effective, but there are so many more options that could be used, whether it's, like, you know, making things unplottable. There are certain places that we've seen where, like, there's like a beast that's called a quintuped that is on the Isle of Dreer that they made unplottable, Runespore reservations that are unplottables, things like that, that, like, make it actually, like, impossible to find.
Yeah.
That I think could be used. Of course, it makes it hard to find. So that's sort of inconvenient if your whole community is kind of not findable. But
I mean, if it saves you, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I mean, at some point, like, desperate times call for desperate measures. But, well, anyway, I guess before I move off topic, like, the biggest thing then is trying to keep wild spaces wild. You know, whether that's Muggle repelling charms or all of that, like, trying to make sure that these ecosystems are protected provides not only for the creatures and plants that the magical community needs, you know, to kind of do its thing, but yeah, also provides that sort of option for secrecy that I think, you know, really was sort of underutilized. And unfortunately, like, it's kind of hard to sort of take space back once it's been developed without exposing the magical world. But trying to sort of keep that spread, I think, would be to the benefit of the magical community. There are some good wins, I think, for conservation that we've seen in the story. Newt Scamander, my hero.
Pew, pew, pew!
Yeah, like saving Graphorns by getting breeding pairs back together and slowly trying to get that population brought back. You know, we see a lot of reservations. I think it's also kind of tricky because, again, like, we've sort of squeezed nature so much. Like, the dragon reserve in Romania is great, except, like, those dragon species don't live in Romania necessarily.
Yeah.
And like a Chinese dragon doesn't necessarily need to be near a Norwegian dragon and a Welsh dragon and all that. So like, it's good. I'm glad that we're doing it. But maybe we get some reservations in those countries for those dragons.
Yeah. And that could be a subplot of the new TV show that's coming out.
Right. Yeah. I love it.
And also not borrowing them to Hogwarts for tournaments. That would be great.
Yeah, no, let's not do that.
That's a tough look. Yeah, shouldn't do that. Or, you know, let's say that we do that. Tricking them into thinking that we're stealing their eggs.
Yeah, not good.
Probably
yeah.
not a great move either. I don't love that. So like Grafhorn's Runespore reservation that somebody mentioned, I think my favorite species of dragon is the Herbidian Black.
Oh, okay.
They're from like some specific islands around Scotland, and they've been preserved and kept hidden in that natural area by like one Scottish family for like thousands of years.
Oh, wow.
Which is awesome. The Golden Snidget.
The Snidget was featured in Hogwarts Legacy. I learned more about the Snidget there.
Nice.
Yeah.
The Modesty Rabnot Snidget Reservation.
Oh, where's that?
It's in England. So Modesty Rabnot, when someone released a golden snidget, the person that released it said, like, I'll give 100 galleons to any player that catches it. This was before the golden snitch was a thing. Mm-hmm. It had already been part of, I think, broom races, and the object was to catch them. And so they were already, like, near extinct, and she caught it and released it. And years later, they created this reservation when they realized, like, oh, this creature is actually going to go extinct if we don't do something. They created this reservation for golden snidgets and named it after her. Pretty awesome.
I wonder if that's the one that was in Hogwarts Legacy, because it was in England, you know?
Could be. But so they were near extinct to now, I assume, near endangered. I don't think they're still, like, thriving, but better because of this reservation. Yeah, you see reservations to different kind of dragons. There is a Swedish dragon reservation, which I hope is specific to the Swedish short snout. The dragon reserve in Romania, it's great. Could be better. There's a Hodag reserve in Wisconsin. That's a Hodag is like it's really kind of a local folklore beast to that area. So in different areas, I mean, the Forbidden Forest, the Black Lake, you know, different anti-poaching laws, things like that. Like, all of these things are really good steps and I think are conservation wins. But yeah, there could be a lot more, you know, and I will say, like, Newt is my hero in part because, you know, before him, a lot of the feeling was that natural creatures should be killed and eliminated, exterminated. And because of him, that opinion started to change. And again, it is really wild that they would want to exterminate these natural creatures. Same part of the natural world. Yeah, like, it seems weird that we're like, oh, well, we got to get rid of this thing.
Yeah, it's like, that's a waste of space. It's like, no, yeah. That's an alive thing that should be kept alive, and it's not wasting space. It's serving a function. You just can't directly see it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, I get that, yes, secrecy is a huge thing, and if you have a dragon's call attention to you. But again, that goes back to, like, maybe we should be sort of controlling the space that muggles are allowed to kind of get close to, rather than like, oh, well, we need to get dragons out of here. The momentum has moved in the right direction, but it is interesting to think about, like, how the magical world could be helping tackle real life issues in conservation, whether it's, you know, invasive species. Can you transfigure an invasive species into a native species? Can you, you know, transfigure carbon in the atmosphere into something else? They probably could have solved the whole, like, transportation dependency on fossil fuels things, like, if they had not been so concerned with secrecy. It is that is something that I daydream about a lot, is like, if I were a better wizard, how could I use magic to actually, like, solve these real world problems?
I think that's a big side of the wizarding world that we don't get to see, because, like, larger social media takes, more or less, like, TikTok and things like that on, like, what it would be like to be a wizard at Hogwarts, not as Harry Potter. We get all these, like, people who are, like, coming at it from, like, a cultural perspective, people coming from an environmental perspective, just, like, a logic-based perspective of, they're like, we have magic, why don't we use it for X, Y, and Z? And that kind of broadens, I think, the scope of what the wizarding world can be. And you think, like, yeah, if I was a witch, like, I would definitely have a slide out my window or something, or I would address like a certain issue that I have with like my nutrition client. And then even larger things, like you said, like you could go assist ecosystems in a way
right.
that is a large impact way. Because you have these, one, magical creatures, and two, magical abilities yourself. So I think that that's a good and hot take, Eric.
Thank you.
One reason is probably that the rules are still so strict that it's yeah. forbidden to do certain things so that we are not risking to be discovered. Because if you do some huge miracle, the muggles will get suspicious and you have to find ways to explain this.
Yeah.
We have seen this in many characters before in the stories that are telling that they have been helping people around them and then they are being hanged for witchery.
Yeah.
So it has been done, just maybe not too careful, I guess. But I bet there are lots of laws in place that are forbidding and restricting you from actually doing these big things.
Yeah.
But you definitely are both right with that, that there could be ways to be found that could help in ways that would not be so obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like setting up like a watering spell for like an area, if there's a drought, right. like a little tiny area of your environment that needs water.
And I've thought about this too, because like in sort of crafting this, I was like, well, I mean, it's, you know, 2023, like, we don't typically hang people. What if the magical world was just exposed and we just found out and like, okay, yes, we're here. Yes, we have these godlike powers. We can use them. Mm-hmm. I think actually the real danger is that, I don't know, like, yes, in an optimistic sort of perspective, we could use magic to solve all of these problems that are really hard to solve mm-hmm. without magic. On the other hand, like all of the bad things that are happening that then have access to magic, like now we've got you know, corrupt politicians and wars and things, that's like, oh my god, we don't need that.
No.
Consequences of that would be huge.
Yeah. So beyond just like persecution, it might be for the best that magic is kept hidden. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it sucks because it would be nice to kind of solve some of these things.
Yeah. And then you also have to think too, like, we've exposed the magical community. I feel like one of the first things on people's docket will be like, well, let's cure the world of COVID. And what if the cure doesn't exactly work? And what if there's like repercussions of right. whatever the cure is? Then there's just going to be a big like hatred towards the magical community of like, oh, you did this, but then you caused this. Like, how could you,
right.
how could you do that? If something negative comes out of it, there would be a big persecution against these people. And I think that's kind of what the Wizarding World is scared of, is like, they're going to come after us if something bad happens. And
mm-hmm.
we have to take on the whole world.
But, you know, there's definitely already that connection between the ministers, the muggle minister mm-hmm. and the magical one, that are corresponding with each other and helping each other out, basically. So if something happens, then they are informing each other and so on. So I think there could possibly be connections made that could help in certain ways. But everywhere around the world, when it comes to laws, it's so difficult to manage through them and get things approved. We are seeing the stories, of course, also many years back. Who knows? By the time now, things might have already improved. We just don't hear from the stories, you know, because we're not at that time. But
yeah, again, if I were a better wizard, I would definitely be like using my magic on nature and trying to do things for that, like getting rid of honeysuckle and all the like horrible invasive species that are taking over our forests and things like that.
Yes, but then you have to think also that one person thinks, I am doing this now because this is going to be good. But who can tell that this is really the right thing to do? Because in your mind it is. But someone else might have a different opinion or a different knowledge about things. So it's kind of dangerous to just go ahead and just do things also in that way.
Especially with nature, and it gets tricky because things are so interrelated. Mm-hmm. I would probably go after the things that are like really harmful. I mean, I know here there's a type of pear tree that I think is native to China that people plant everywhere, and it's got these horrible smelling white flowers. The trees are like so soft that they'll like tear themselves apart, but it's just so incredibly invasive that it takes over everywhere. And so our native trees can't get into the ground to actually seed and sprout anywhere. And like understories and all that, there's the Asian bush honeysuckle is like taking over forest floors everywhere because it is so voracious of an invasive species. It's so aggressive. It just spreads like crazy. But yeah, so if, you know, like my garden, my yard right now has a bunch of dandelions. Well, dandelions aren't native to here, but they are native to where the bees are from. So the bees love them. Bees aren't native. So do you convert those to native? It gets pretty tricky to your point, but.
Yeah, because the environment adapts a little bit.
Right. Some things, particularly like the really aggressive plants, I'd probably just go after.
You know what, Eric? That is your personal choice, you know? You have to live with the repercussions.
Right or wrong, yep.
Every action has a reaction, so.
Right. I may be the villain of the next TV series. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. Okay, well, I think that pretty much wraps up most of our discussion.
Yeah.
I think, Eric, besides, like, planting a native plant to the area that we live in, what's, like, one, if we can have, like, one big takeaway point for our listeners in regards to, like, nature conservation, magical nature thingies, whatever you want to hit on, what's, like, one big thing you would like everyone to just, like, put in their pocket and take away from this discussion?
The big thing is find whatever nature you can find and get whatever enjoyment you can get out of it. Whether that's, you know, if you live in the middle of the city and all you have access to are
pigeons,
birds, and the assorted insects that you might find.
Pizza rat.
Pay attention. Yeah. I mean, a rat, whatever. Like, pay attention to those and try to have as much empathy for them as you can. Mm-hmm. And just be aware of, you know, your actions and try to make the best kind of choice for them and the environment that you can. No one's perfect. The world that we live in is very complex. Even someone that loves nature like me, you can't make the right call every time. It's very difficult to live kind of a perfectly ecologically balanced life. But yeah, I think first thing, biggest thing is to just find whatever nature you can and get whatever enjoyment you can out of it. And then the rest will probably come, whatever access you have to that. But at least that appreciation for nature, that's the perfect kind of right step for me, I think.
I love it. Thank you so much, Eric, for the lovely discussion that you provided to us. And
yeah, that was great.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, a lot of great points. And listeners, if you have any thoughts or feelings about anything we talked about, please let us know. Hit us up on our socials or send any of your thoughts and feelings to puffcastpot@gmail.com. And we can also connect you with some more resources as possible if you'd like them. I don't personally have them, but I'm sure Eric and Mel have some resources too that we can pull from. A lot of it is like, I feel like hyper specific to your area too. So if you go look up like local conservation areas, things in your area, that's probably honestly your best bet because every ecosystem is different. And that's great. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
All right, people, the very last blurb of me, I promise. But we have been talking about this topic now for quite a bit, and I cannot pass this without giving a shout out to the Protego Foundation, because they very much fight for exactly these kinds of things. And I would really love for you to go into our show notes and find the link I will provide you with that leads to this year's Wizards for Environmental Protection Earth Day campaign. What a perfect timing for us to actually talk about this. It provides you with all the information you need on how animal products affect the environment, plastic, food waste, new materials, how transportation affects it, and what are the things that you can do to help reduce all this waste. Shopping, for example, secondhand, using alternative forms of transportation, avoiding animal products. Maybe you cannot cut down everything, but every tiny bit already helps, even if it doesn't feel like one person and their small, in quotation marks, acts are affecting anything. If we are all pulling together, it definitely does something. So there's also a new merch line with the Wizards for Environmental Protection logo. Proceeds from the sales of those items from now until the end of Earth Month will go to One Tree Planted. You can go and find that on pitchandprose.com/protego. The link will be in our show notes. As part of this rendition of the campaign, Protego has also plans to launch the Wizarding Guide to Going Vegan. So if you are still struggling or need more information, that is the place to go and find out more. Go into the info box, check out those links, and send some love to the Protego Foundation, because they are amazing. And I'm not saying that only because I am part of the volunteer staff working for them. So go and give them some love. They deserve it. They're doing a great job. And if you want to help them either volunteering, there's always some jobs open, so check that out as well, or help donating to the causes and help make this planet healthier, better, and happy.
Okay, well, that wraps up our discussion about the ecosystems and everything that we have in it. And then that means it's time for us to play our game. This is the first round of the game for the year of our great Lord Voldemort 2023.
Your great.
My great Lord Voldemort.
Yeah, can we put a little...
I'm not going to take part to that.
Yes,
Eric and Mel don't want to take
part. Nope.
They don't want to deal with it. So, okay, listeners, it's time for us to play. Are you puffing kidding me? And this is the game where each person has one fact, quote-unquote, that they tell about themselves to the group. And the group must vote if the person is telling the truth or puffing with them. And each guessing person can also ask one question of the person giving that statement. Eric has chosen to go last, which I think is a first for our guests.
It is.
Usually we offer them the first slot and they say yes.
We'll see if it pays off.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if Eric can puff with us or not. But Mel, would you like to go first because you are the most prepared?
I would love to go first. When I was little, I had a collection of 55 five-leaved clovers.
Mel, you've lied so much recently that I'm just inclined to say that this is a lie, like straight out the gate, because I feel like every single episode we played so far, there's been a technique, you've lied on a technicality. So I'm wondering if you have like...
So you think I'm going to lie again because I have been lying so much, wouldn't it be more...
I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if you said, aha, no, I had 56 clovers, and I'd be like, ah, damn.
I guarantee I wouldn't do that. That would be silly. Oh.
Yeah, but that's what a liar would say, though.
Yeah, yeah, she's trying to convince us, Eric.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, like I wouldn't fall for the whole, I wouldn't lie to you.
Yeah. Is this a current collection that you have or something you had when you were a different age?
When I was little, I said.
Oh, when you were little. Oh, you did say that. Okay, I guess I wasted my question. Oh, well.
No, it's okay. You can ask.
Is there a specific reason why you collected the four-leaf clovers as opposed to other plants?
So four-leafed clovers bring good luck, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as a little kid, I thought five-leafed clovers bring even more luck. And five is my favorite number, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you think, Eric? Do you have a question for her?
How many years... did you collect the five-leaf clovers over? I don't know that that was a helpful question, but I don't know. Yeah.
That's a hard question. I think, I don't know, maybe 2-3 years, something like that. Okay. It's hard to say. I can't really remember exactly, but my goal was to find 55 because that was my favorite number.
I'm just going to say that Mel is lying and she never collected all 55. She was looking for the 50. The way she's nodding at me, I feel like I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stick with it and say that I think that there's some kind of technicality here where the leaves like wilted on her and she wasn't able to collect all 55 before one of the leaves collection decimated itself.
If you would have asked me another a proper question, I could have answered that.
Yeah.
There's a way to preserve them.
I
know you can pick true if you want to 50-50 shot it, but
I'm gonna pick true just so that we cover both bases.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know here.
Knowing my luck, I'm probably wrong. So
you can still change your answer if you want to.
No, I'm gonna go with
you.
Want
to swap? We could swap answers.
No, I'm gonna go false.
Okay, all right. I'll say true.
It is true.
Oh, okay. Damn!
All right.
My grandma had the luckiest garden I have ever seen. Mm-hmm. Her whole lawn was full with clover, and all of them had at least 5 up to 7 leaves.
Oh, wow.
Each. I have no idea how.
It's wild.
But I collected a lot of them, and I have been preserving them in a book, mm-hmm. and I had been putting clear tape over them to preserve them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it is true. And I still have them, but I am currently not sure where.
Oh, okay. Nice. Okay. Eric, would you like me to go next, or are you ready?
You go. I'm still trying to decide.
Okay. My statement is that yesterday on my walk with Myrtle and my aunt and uncle, we saw some jellyfish, and I got very excited.
Okay.
How many jellyfish did you see?
Oh, I don't know.
I feel like that was a wasted question, too. Like, I'm really kind of bombing these questions. Like,
I mean, I'll say at least 20, probably. I wasn't really counting, just because...
Well, now I know what answer I'm going to pick.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely a definitive questionnaire.
Right. Way to go,
like,
bud.
Wow, I learned so many things from that.
Yeah.
So were they, like, very close to the shore? Were they washing up?
No, so there's a marina that's right down the street from me. And so if you go to the edge of the little dock where the marina is, they'll often be like where the boats kind of are docked down there. And so we got lucky and we saw them all kind of like bloop, 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 blooping around where the boats are all docked. So you're kind of overlooking a little bit of area that's like shallow, but not super shallow water. And they float around and they kind of like bloop.
Was SpongeBob there?
No.
That is my bonus question.
I couldn't see him, but that doesn't mean he wasn't there.
Okay.
Mm. I want to say it's true.
Yeah.
So we both think it's true.
I also think it's true.
It is? False. We didn't even go to the marina yesterday. We went to the beach and we didn't see jellies. So.
Oh, no.
I haven't seen the jellies for a couple of months, actually. So sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. The thing about the marina was true because they do actually like live in that little area. And you go to the edge and you look over and sometimes you can see them. Sometimes you see those like giant fish that are living down there, too. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll see them today. We're going to take Myrtle for a walk somewhere else. So maybe we'll go down to the marina and see if we can do some jelly spotting.
Nice. Okay. For mine. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go with this. As a kid, my favorite place was the desert.
Like your favorite like environment, kind of like when you're learning about different environments stuff at school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there one specific reason why you gravitated towards the desert, like an animal or something? Or
that's actually kind of an interesting question. Well, my sort of the grandfather figure of my dad's side of the family lived in Arizona.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that's why.
I feel like the same way that you feel too, Eric, about like certain things from your childhood. They might have been like an ADHD fixation. Something like inside of you is just like, I must be a part of this. And you don't really have like a rational reason as to why.
Like, did I see it in a book and I was like, oh, I love deserts. And like, that's a thing. Or
yeah, you just like all of a sudden you were like, yeah.
Right.
Why was I into monkeys? Like,
yeah. Kid brain was like, I love this more than anything else in the world. And it's like, why is that exactly?
So we love the desert. We're not exactly sure why, but we have a relative who lives in a desert area. I want to say that this is probably true.
It's kind of strange to think that you would have a love for the desert when all I see from you now is like trees and everything that is green and water. Mm. And it's the complete opposite of that. And that's why it feels strange. And I would be inclined to say it's not true.
And what is it, Eric?
It is true, actually.
Ah!
Yeah, as a kid, I was like, my favorite animal was the coyote, I think, at least in that stage, and still is. Like, we hear him around here sometimes, and my wife is like, all right, well, I'm like, let's go out and find him. Like,
it's time to go coyote hunting, and your wife's like, no.
Yeah, probably shouldn't.
Maybe not.
But like every time I have, and I've only seen him a handful of times, but every time I'm like, oh my God, it's a coyote. Like, yeah, I don't know why. Like, I think because it was so different from like my current surroundings that like, I know our older brother went to visit my grandpa, but he came back and I was like, oh, well, he saw the desert. Like, I'm going to be obsessed with the desert now. Mm-hmm. And like, just the more my little kid brain like latched onto that, I don't know, something about it, like cacti, all of that was just like
spiky things.
I dig it.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you know what's funny, I as soon as I kind of thought about, you know, one day when I'm on Puffcast, like it's like, ah, the guests never lie, I'm gonna come up with a lie, like I'm gonna come in here ready. I do not lie well at all.
Yeah, I will say, like I said, guests, especially the Hufflepuff guests, have a really hard time lying to us.
Yeah.
All right. Our guests have 1 point. Juliana has 1 point. I have 0 points. But this is only the first round and we know
how it goes,
how that can go, how much it can change. So
yeah,
we have a full year ahead of us. This is the first round of our new year. Fourth round of this fabulous game.
For what it's worth, I'm rooting for you both.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. even though I just played for the guest team, but, you know.
Yeah.
But that was great. Thank you, Eric.
Yes. Sure. Thank you.
And now we will hand our episode over to Miss Buttercup to see if she has a question for us this week.
Happy belated Earth Day and Earth Month to you all. For this week, I would love to hear from you. In what ways do you think the wizards could use their magic to help our environment? Or should they even meddle with it at all? Share your answers with us on our social media or send us an email at puffcastpod@gmail.com.
Okay, and thank you, Miss Buttercup, for that lovely question. And Eric, thank you again for joining us today. You are a very wonderful guest. Yay!
Thanks for having me. It was great to be here.
Would you like to tell us where people can find you? And also, we should not forget, you should all go out on the internet and look at the hashtags that Eric has coined for his Wandmakers Unite group.
Mm-hmm. Wandmakers Unite. Yeah, so we've got a collection of wandmakers that are from all over the world. Mm-hmm. I think we decided last year that we're going to do it kind of quarterly. So for each like seasonal equinox, we're going to do a wand challenge. So the next one will be summer, which is in June, something maybe? August? Yeah. I don't know.
And with wand challenge, of course, you mean you have a theme and you all have to come up with a carving of a wand.
So for spring, we did, I think, for instance, Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
Before that, for winter, it was a holiday theme. Before that, I think we did Ancient Egypt. We just pick a theme and everyone creates a wand according to that theme. And then on the same day, we all post them and freak out and support. And Mel and Julie Allen are like, oh my God, all the notifications stopped talking.
Yeah.
We love these results. It's amazing. As you said earlier in the discussion, you give one theme, one topic to several people, and everyone comes up with a completely different style and idea for the wands, and it's just amazing to see.
Yeah, it's really cool to see everyone's approach. You know, the people that are like really amazing with paint, which I am terrible with. And, you know, people that will create, you know, natural wands that fit that style. Or, you know, we have people that will make them that like have like glow in the dark things, like all the different tie-ins are like, oh, wow, okay.
Oh, my God. The Krampus.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
That was fun.
That was so good.
That was fun. Yeah. Thank you.
Where can people find you, Eric, individually, if they'd like to find you and your work?
So you can find me on Instagram at Wood Thrush Wands, and you can find my Etsy shop on Etsy the same way. So if you do a shop search for Wood Thrush Wands, you'll find me there.
Awesome.
Thanks again for having me. This has been awesome. Dream checked off.
Wow. I was part of a dream in a good way.
Yeah, right?
Okay. Well, listeners, if you'd like to get in contact with us over here on Puffcast, you can listen to us on all platforms where podcasts are found. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PuffcastPod. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Puffcast, and also send us a long form response to this episode at PuffcastPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback. And you can also support us on patreon.com/Puffcast for as little as $2 a month to help us donate to charity. Again, in May, we are donating to the Jane Goodall Foundation. So thank you, patrons, for that. And you can also get exclusive benefits like the Buttercup interview, the Pizza Wizard wrap, and also the Juliana joke calendar for 2 years if you'd like to subscribe to that, plus all the other fun things that Mel has in store for the rest of 2023 that will also be up there. So patreon.com/puffcast for as little as $2 a month. And you can also get a shirt at bonfire.com. If you search Puffcast, we are the only result that comes up. And you can get yourself a very snazzy Puffcast shirt. And you can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you leave a 5-star review, we will read it here, and I will stalk you till I can find you and give you a bracelet. Big John, you have not let me know where you live and where I can send a bracelet.
I think you are scaring people off with that, and that's why. So, Big John, it's okay.
Get your bracelet, Big John.
Yeah, get that bracelet, get that sticker. I have it coming for you if you want it. But, okay, until next time.
Stay puffy.
And badger on.